News Talk Saturday.
Now we're going to talk about food and dietary questions with our Ask the Expert slot with Sarah Keogh from Eat Well. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
I feel bad because I had a cupcake and now I didn't realise you were going to be sitting beside
Please
me here.
Please don't feel bad about
that. Is that okay to do on Valentine's Day?
Well, I was buying chocolates for my husband late kind of this morning and I'm in the shop and someone is like, yeah, I'm getting them, but I'm having these for myself for breakfast
yes.
as well. So yeah.
Very nice.
Absolutely.
Okay. We should say if you have any questions for Sarah, you can WhatsApp 087 1400 106 if you'd like to get in touch with us. We were talking about weight loss drugs there at the start of this hour. But of course, as Brendan O'Shea was reminding us, that is one way to lose weight. Other people will want to go down a route of doing small weekly goals with their eating. Is that a way of making sure you keep to your promise?
So I think what I would say 30 years working in terms of weight is it's completely different for different people. And the people using the weight loss drugs are often people where there's a really genuine mismatch between how their the hormones that control their appetite are working. So for those people, those medications work incredibly well and they are so fantastic and dietitians really welcome them. We think they're fabulous. But there's definitely people who probably don't need the medication for it. And that's where you're looking at lifestyle changes in terms of, you know, nothing dramatic, you know, the smaller plate, the getting out and doing a bit of exercise, you know, balancing out, getting the fruit and veg up, particularly getting the fibre up, you know, with Fibre February and everything at the moment. Yeah. All of those things help.
Yeah. Actually, on that fibre, there's a story in the Daily Mail today that women should eat more grains and men should down more cups of coffee to add up to 3 years to their lives. Just on the grain thing, sometimes people feel eating grain is like the devil, you know, that women don't eat as much as they should because they think that that's in some way bad for the waistline.
Well, it's a funny one. Women typically eat a few more whole grains than men. But yeah, the whole low carb fad, when that was a huge thing, has actually put a lot of damage into people looking at the whole grains as the very healthy thing that kind of dietitians have been saying for decades, you know. Mm. So this study was interesting. They looked at 5 different dietary patterns. So there's a couple of different ones out there that we would use to measure. So there's a healthy eating index. You look at the DASH diet and a couple of others. So they looked at, and all 5 of them showed benefits in kind of having a longer life expectancy with that. So they were, you know, with that. One that they did look at, though, that stood out for the men in particular was the diabetes prevention one. And that's basically healthy eating, but they deliberately include coffee.
Yeah.
And we've known for a long time that coffee helps reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes. So that all of you who are into your coffee, it's great. Go for it. For women, they found a little bit better in terms of whole grains with that. But again, not surprising. Yeah. We've known for a long time these are good things to go for.
Okay. And what do we mean when we say the whole grains? What should we be eating?
So you're looking for anything that's kind of the brown version. So whole grain bread is going to be your brown bread.
But I like my white bread. White bread is nicer.
I don't know. I would think the brown bread is a bit more flavour.
White rice is nicer than brown rice.
You know, I disagree with you there. I think you have to go for the flavour. I think most people don't cook their brown rice for long enough. People used to come into my clinic going, that brown rice is very crunchy.
Yeah.
You like it, you got to cook it. But quinoa, whole grains, you know, if you like to try brown rice, buckwheat, all of those kind of grains that are out there. So it's a little bit of kind of, if you're doing your sourdough bread, make it with your you know, your whole grains. But even just getting, I'm seeing more kind of from a bread point of view, they're kind of trying to get the whole grains into the white bread, particularly for kids, if you're not trying to get them to eat the whole grains with them.
Okay, now a lot of questions coming in. Actually, a lot of questions about the school lunches. I think it must have started this week in some schools because there's a lot. I know of one school where they started it this week and the kids were a bit nervous going in on that day. Someone asked the question, are the school lunches safe? You'd like to hope that they're safe, but
absolutely.
Are they nutritious?
Absolutely. Do you know what? And yes to both. And it's a thing, it's not even just this week. We've just had sort of relentless negativity around this really, really important programme. I mean, I actually find when I talk to people, they're astonished that there genuinely are quite a lot of kids in Ireland who go to school with very little food, who may not come have dinner at home. We have this idea that poverty is something that exists somewhere else in the world, but we really do have kids, and getting school lunches in is about equalising educational opportunities for all of these children. But the scaremongering about, like, if you just literally looked at what's on social media at the moment, you would think they were absolutely horrendous, that people are pouring arsenic into them, but they're so well looked after with them. Like,
typically, what are they in the lunches? What are kids
having?
So they
vary. They have different things, but a lot of them, all of them have. So there's standards for the hot school meals. So they all have to have a protein in them. So whether that is some form of chicken or beef or something like that. So there's, you know, you're seeing them with things like bolognese, you're seeing them with chicken curry. They all need to add vegetables. We know a huge issue is that a lot of the kids, if you put a lot of vegetable into the meal, you've got so many fussy eaters. Like 60% of parents will say their kids are a fussy eater. So a lot of kind of companies are doing things like giving fruit instead to try and get, you know, the 5 a day in. But they're really careful. Most of them are looking at, you know, they've dietitians working for them to have a look at that the salt is okay and the saturated fat is okay and all of that. And like, it's interesting. I see a lot of sort of live on social media about it being terrible. And I get so many messages from parents going, they're actually grand. My kids like them. My kids enjoy them. You know, they're not going to be Michelin star restaurants. You know what I mean? But they're totally fine. I would say to parents, there's nothing to worry about here. Yeah, keep an eye. Let's keep a watch on it. And it's really good we've standards and that we have reviews and that we check all of this. But there's really nothing to be worried about with. Mm.
Someone else says that I order school lunches weekly for my daughter. I'm very happy with the quality. Hearing a lot in the news that the lunches are not healthy or well made. I wouldn't say you're hearing that in the news, but you're certainly seeing it
online
on social media as well. Okay, someone else was in touch with us to say, I've been diagnosed with low vitamin D and told to take a supplement. Why do I need to take it? Can I not get vitamin D from food?
So yes, but in the amounts are tiny. So just everybody in Ireland needs to be taking a vitamin D supplement right now. So from October to March, yeah, the sun that hits Ireland is just 2 weeks, and that's our major place to get vitamin D. It's just 2 weeks. So it's a bit sunny out there today. Wouldn't matter. You make zero vitamin D today. So you have to have the supplement. Why can you not get it from food? We need 15 micrograms of vitamin D a day as an adult. You'd want to be eating salmon about twice a day. Get it. So it is in food. It's just not in very large amounts in food. So definitely. And if you've low vitamin D, one of the other things is you're going to check for celiac disease. It's often a flag for celiac disease as well.
Mm. Someone else on iron. I've been having vertigo over the past week. Any idea what I can do for vertigo? Someone said maybe it is iron related.
Can be. I had vertigo myself for a while and it's very, very unpleasant if you've got it. So lots of things can cause it. So it is go and get a good checkout. So there's so many different things. From a nutrition point of view, we would see certainly if low iron is there, can give you, make you feel lightheaded more so than vertigo. But definitely, but don't just take an iron supplement without getting a blood test for iron. That's really important. One in five people in Ireland carry the genes for hemochromatosis. And one of the signs of hemochromatosis can be fatigue and being lightheaded. So it's really important. You never take an iron supplement without having an iron, and not just your hemoglobin checked, but your iron stores checked as well with your doctor. But that would be one. Another cause is things like undiagnosed underactive thyroid can be in there, but not drinking enough water. You know, low body weight for a lot of people who are kind of going to the gym a lot, and they're particularly if their body fat level goes down too much. So there's all of those things, but definitely get it checked out.
Yeah, I noticed that when I lost weight as well, the low blood pressure, there's a change.
Comes
and you can feel a bit lightheaded. Yeah. Mm. Now, someone else wanted to know, can you ask Sarah about intermittent fasting and would you recommend it?
So I've no issue with it. It is though.
Explain it again briefly.
Oh, yeah, no worries. So intermittent fasting is, there's two main versions of it. One is what we call the 5-2, where you would eat normally for 5 days and fast for 2 days in the week. And the other one is called the 16-8, which is where you will eat for 8 hours a day, not solidly for 8 hours a day, but eat within an 8 hour window, and then you don't eat for the other 16 hours. And both of them will help you to lose weight because you eat fewer calories. But that is all that they do. Now, they work very well and they suit a lot. Now, I have to say the 5-2, very few people last more than a couple of weeks on that. But the 16-8 actually suits a lot of people for weight loss, because for them to have that cutoff of 7 o'clock in the evening or whatever actually mentally just sets up for them. What I see about intermittent fasting is lots of claims around, oh, it balances your blood glucose or lowers your cholesterol or has all of these other things. The science is not showing that to us at the moment. Now, in saying that, the weight loss is still very positive. And we know, you know, weight loss helps to get to healthy blood pressure and it does other nice things with that. But the intermittent fasting itself, if it works for you, go for it if you're comfortable with it. But it's not one I would be forcing myself to do. There's no extra special benefit to it.
A couple of people saying that they're seeing a lot of negative stuff online about dairy and whether it's good for you or not. We had that ruling during the week that you can't call oat milk milk anymore. Yeah, yeah. But lots of people are going for alternatives to dairy. Is dairy the devil?
No, and it's just like every fad. Like in the late 90s, we were all told, you know, the fad was zero fat. And then we had the carbs we were talking about, we're all supposed to. This year, it's dairy. No, like if someone has a dairy allergy, absolutely avoid it. But for everybody else, very nutritious food. And, you know, working as a dietitian, you'll get a few people are lactose intolerant, probably around 10%. Yeah. But you can use lactose-free milk. But dairy in and of itself, very, very healthy, very natural.
What about the full fat versus low fat milk and the slimline milk?
Yeah, so the nutrition is the same. I meet a lot of people when I'm doing kind of workplace talks and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, and the low fat milk has less calcium. Not true. It actually has slightly more. So there's no issue. It's really only if your cholesterol is a bit high, I would be kind of going for the lower fat milk, to be honest. But, you know, if you're putting 3 drops of milk in your tea, it really doesn't matter. It's only if you're kind of drinking it or making your nice milky coffees out of it that you'll need the extra.
Okay, someone else wants to know, I have been suffering with cramps recently, mostly during the night. I eat well and work out.
So, I mean, again, a million things. From a nutrition point of view, we would look at hydration. So if you're doing a good bit of working out, making sure you're kind of getting your 2 litres of liquid in a day. And then if you're doing a lot of sweating, just to top that up. If you're very active, like if you see it with kind of someone who's doing a huge amount of running, I would definitely make sure you're getting plenty of fruit and veg in, that you're going to be adding in things like your potassium And bring and all of them, not just bananas, but any fruit or veg coming in there will really support that.
Social media is coming up a lot. You must bang your head against a wall with some of the stuff you see, including people thinking that, pretending that they're dietitians and nutritionists as well. But it must be frustrating when you see some of the myths.
It really is. And do you know what? I first started doing anything on radio about 25 years ago because a gang of us got together. And if somebody doesn't start putting out some facts, it just gets swamped. But I think there's so much at the moment that people literally don't know where to look. And I think a lot of people don't realise that there's actual register for dietitians the way there is for doctors and nurses. And you can go onto the register at coru.ie, C-O-R-U.ie, and you can put someone's name in and check if they're qualified. And then you can have a really well-qualified nutritionist. But I'd look for someone who has a degree in nutrition. And can
you mean not just because they're on social media then?
Yeah,
do you
know, just double check. And just, and you know, I would always say if someone is scaring you, that's the walk away. Because, you know, there's a lot of times, I mean, I could have a huge following on Instagram if I was scaring the wits out of people. But, you know, it's, we don't need to do that. If they're scaring you, step away. Food doesn't need to be scary.
Right. Okay. A couple of questions about kids and eating. Mm. So my kids like sweets, but I don't want to give them chocolate. And someone else says, hi, Shane, what can your dietitian recommend for fussy eaters? I have twins aged 5.
Wow. So they're two good questions. I would always let kids have a bit of chocolate or sweet or something like that, because, and I'm not saying live on it, but we have to look at total eating and we have to look at not giving children hang-ups about certain foods. This idea that we all have to have this perfect diet and no sweets or chocolate. Tell you, when they get into their teens on that kind of thing, they go wild in terms of chocolate and things like that, or they come out with this huge guilt, and this is where we see eating disorders. So yes, kids need the healthy food most of the time, but they do need the odd chicken goujon. They do, not that they need it for health, but from a mental health point of view and a good relationship from food, to have some sweets or chocolate or things like that. And I actually find families where they're a little, they're a normal part of the week, kids are actually a little bit less interested.
Yeah.
So it's fine to do it.
It's still disappointing, though, when you see in restaurants the kids' menu. And it is things, and I suppose they're tailoring because the kids want to eat these things, but it's sort of your nuggets, chips, pizzas, things like that.
It's such a good point. But I was lecturing on a Master's in Culinary Nutrition, so a lot of chefs working on that. And some of the projects my students have done, they were saying, like, one of them said that they put out all their meals with, say, mashed potato for the kids, and every parent came in and got, no, I want the chips.
Yeah.
And I think, again, we're looking at it. Yes, it would be fabulous to have more options, but at the same time, when a parent is coming out with kids for food, they want the kids to sit and eat and be quiet and not to be complaining. So there's definitely work to be done on that, but
Okay, finally, question for you. A confused listener texts this in. Do I need protein powders if I'm working out? I'd have to say, given the algorithm for me on Instagram, everyone is saying protein, protein, protein. Do you need protein powder?
Depends. So if you're getting it from your food, no. But most people think they need far more protein than they actually need. So unless you're bodybuilding for the actual Olympics, you don't need to be on this 2 grams of protein per kilogram per day. Most people need a lot less. And when I'm working with people, the vast majority of the time, if they're really into the protein, I am pulling them back, because protein, we don't store it. Excess protein just goes on as fat. So if you're actually working out and you can't get rid of the belly, I'd actually have a look. Are you overdoing the protein? The protein shakes are safe, but a lot of people don't need them.
Good advice. Sorry, we're out of time. Sarah Keogh, dietitian, founder of Eat Well. You have a website?
I do, eatwell.ie, and Instagram at Sarah Keogh RD.
News Talk Saturday.